Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promoting for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I went into a bar quite near where you lived, and the guy in there, the barman, said to me, he said, where are you from? I said, Liverpool. He said, Clock Town! I said, yeah, that's about right.
That was the laugh of Jurgen Klopp. Jurgen bloody Klopp. Because here we are. The beautiful game has returned. And in Klopp Town, sorry, Liverpool, we're pressing play once again on a team who were just on the cusp of a Premier League title before everything was cancelled due to the coronavirus. And though this time they're returning to empty stadiums, they're just moments away again from winning the trophy for the first time in 30 years. In fact, by the time that you listen to this, they might even be clutching it. But of course, so much has happened in these intervening weeks. Everywhere, the pandemic has clarified what matters and what doesn't. And I think in the case of Liverpool, it's done more than that. It's crystallised Jurgen Klopp's role as more than just a football manager, and Liverpool as much, much more than just a football team. You're listening to Slow News. I'm Basha Cummings, and this week we're talking to Klopp to understand how it was that he came to stand for a city and its politics and its community.
Slow News is a podcast made by us here at Tortoise. We're a news publisher in an app, online, in our daily Sensemaker email, and, as you already know, in podcasts. What's different about us is that we investigate what's driving the news, and we'd love for you to join us. By becoming a member of our newsroom, you'll get access to our journalism, and you can join our open news meetings and help decide what matters in the world and how we should report it. To get access to all of Tortoise, all you have to do is download our app and take the free trial. Go to tortoisemedia.com/podtrial and help make the news.
So let's start with the end of football as we knew it. The Liverpool versus Atletico Madrid game on the 11th of March. Liverpool were knocked out.
And Liverpool's reign as European champions is over.
Atletico fans were in tears.
There are tears from the Atletico Madrid supporters here at Anfield tonight.
And then lockdown. That game has now come under scrutiny as a potential super spreader event. Infections in Liverpool rocketed after it. But what's striking was that Klopp, usually this friendly, affable figure, those brilliant white teeth smiling, was steely in that moment, furious even. You can't quite hear it in this clip, but as fans hang over the railings to try and shake the hands of the players as they come out onto the pitch, he turns to them and shouts, "Put your hands away, you fucking idiots." And just days after that, he released a statement telling fans, telling everyone really, that this moment, the coronavirus crisis, was much, much bigger than football. That it was time to put everything, even the Premier League, even that trophy, on pause. Even now, when asked if he was ever worried that the title wouldn't materialise, he said, "I've been worried about people dying, not the title.
I live on this planet and I want the planet to be safe, healthy. I wish everybody the best, absolutely. But my opinion about Corona is not important." If
somebody... So how did he become this charismatic leader? Well, Tony Evans, the football journalist who brilliantly describes himself as writer, radical and Scouse separatist, is here to tell the story with me. Tony, welcome.
Oh, good to be here.
What do you make of Klopp's response to coronavirus? Do you agree that it exemplifies how he's become something bigger than a manager.
It certainly does, and he's very direct. I mean, people see a very smiley, affable and fun guy to be with, and he is. But he's also got, underneath, there's a core of steel. You know, you don't mess with Klopp. He's interesting because he grew up in a very small town in the Black Forest called Glatton, a village really. And the people there are very reserved. And, you know, it's very, very hard work and very insular. It's a very Protestant community. It's, you know, that work ethic. And you wouldn't think that someone so effervescent and outwards would come from a background like that.
I think life is our guide. So, and if you use the right crossroads and stuff like this, we have all to make decisions constantly, left, right, straight away, stuff like this. But if you are lucky enough to do more often than not, take the right direction, then you should be fine. Especially, yeah, or at least when you have my life, where I've grown up in a village and stuff like this. There were not a lot of crossroads where I could make a lot of mistakes, to be honest.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because I was in the village where you grew up in February.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. I went went around the area to see what it was like, and it was great. It was snowing, so no one was around. It was, I'll tell you what, when it snows. But it was a fantastic place to grow up, you know. But, I mean, did you get your sense of community there? Because it's a small place. It's a very small place, isn't it?
It is, and funny enough, I said it a couple of times, it's the childhood is brilliant there. The childhood was absolutely brilliant. You could do everything what you wanted as a little kid, but then in the moment when you become a teenager, it becomes boring overnight, pretty much.
Yeah.
Really boring. If you miss the bus, you wait another 24 hours, so it's not that you take the next one. And I knew when I was 14 that I will leave the area, and I loved it being there, but I knew always it's too small for me. It's too small minded, if that makes sense. A lot of duties you have to fulfill over the day. So if you are not on Saturday morning, if you don't, I don't know, what is it, brush the street in front of your house?
Yeah, yeah.
Is that right? If you don't do that, then either way you're dead, or actually, that's the only excuse. You died overnight, because otherwise everybody's asking, where are you? And I never got really in that. It's only a little example. It's a really nice place, nice people. But it was always clear that I will leave as soon as possible, just to experience different things, to experience more, to experience life in a different way. So after I did my A-levels, pretty much, I went on holiday for 2 weeks and came home and left.
So, and Klopp's gone. He's gone to Liverpool, and somehow he synced perfectly with the attitudes there. His politics are very similar to the politics of Liverpool. You know, he's talked in the past about how he's left-leaning, and you know, he'd never vote for a right-wing party. And of course, that ties in with what Bill Shankly said, the great manager who came to Liverpool in 1959 and recast the club from where it had been before. And he spoke of his idea of socialism was everyone working for the same ends and everyone having a share of the rewards.
My views are socialistic views in all aspects. Not that I'm a militant man, you know, because I think that everybody should help each other. And football, we prove conclusively that we at Liverpool, and other clubs as well, and Preston, had a team that they all helped each other. And consequently, every one of them was capped for his country. So by playing collectively, they got individual honours.
The Kop bought into that. Liverpool fans, the vast majority of them, bought into that. And Klopp come along with the same sort of ethos, the same sort of set of beliefs. He believes in people working together. He believes in everyone getting the rewards. He believes, you know, he believes in the National Health Service. And it's interesting, during the lockdown, he was seen on the streets completely oblivious to whether anyone was watching, clapping ambulances when they went past. And he was going into shops and giving large amounts of money in the thousands to the manager and said, take £50 off everyone's bill today. You know, take money off NHS workers, you know, grocery bill. And he's that sort of man. He wants to be like the man in the street.
I tried only to connect with the football team, to be 100% honest, and with the club next. First with the players, then with the club. And all the rest happened. I'm a completely, and I don't want to stress this word, but I'm a really completely normal person. So there's no reason to see it in a different way. That means I have the same needs than other people, I have the same wishes than other people, and I have the same, not with all of them, but I have a lot of problems, we have all the same. And that's 100%. And if you, as long as you see it like this, it's easy to talk to people. It's easy, maybe when you have time, that's my main issue, or easy to connect to people. And I have never a problem with that.
You've become really associated with the club. And I mean, and not just because of the success. I think you really, as I say, there's something more about what you've done at Liverpool than just winning trophies. And it seems that everyone, you know, from your the area you lived in to Liverpool, you know, seasons, it's bigger than football.
So my when I die someday in, well, I'm 53, let me say 50 years. So I'm not really, I'm not interested if people still talk about me. That's really, I'm not, I don't want to have a statue or whatever and then people pop do this kind of stuff. That's not, I hope then they have things to think about in that time and it's nice and be focused on that. And that's what I really like. That's you, as long as you are there, you give whatever you have. Don't hold anything back. You are 100% in this situation, in this town, in this club, whatever.
I was really struck in your conversation with Klopp because you ask him at one point how it is that you build such a successful football team. And he starts talking about the values that he instills in players. And he talks about a sense of common purpose and of sharing responsibility and a sense basically of collectivism. And it struck me in two ways. One, because it's sort of the perfect philosophy of how to survive a pandemic and how to sort of survive lockdown, that we have to look after each other and we have to think communally, but also that it embodies those politics that he's come to sort of talk about in different ways over the years. Do you think that's right?
Oh, without a doubt. But the strange thing is, he didn't realise that Liverpool would actually sort of dovetail with his political views and attitudes when he arrived. He just thought it was a good job. And he didn't realise that the Liverpool crowd, what they really want, what they crave, is someone to be more than just a manager, more than just a winner.
I didn't know about the how big the role is at Liverpool. I knew about Shankly. I knew about Pace. I knew about Kenny and all the other guys. Jarauye, Rafa Benitez, of course. But I knew that about them as managers or coaches, not about what they did for the city or stuff like that. I didn't read a book about Liverpool and all about Bill Shankly even better and read it. And I don't think it would have helped me. Probably I would have thought, wow.
Yeah,
that's really big. So if I have to step in his shoes, that's not possible. So I never thought like this. So Liverpool was a big club for the last 20 years, been 30, 50, 60, 70 years always. But that was not the reason why I came here. It was just an interesting project, a big club with a really good team who is not playing the best football in the moment. And I didn't think a second for what will I be there? What will be my role or something like this? Yes, I have a few question marks in my mind because Germany, you know, I'm a head coach and you come here and it's a manager. In Germany, we think that's just a different job description. It's the same thing with different name. Mm. It's not. So, but I didn't know that before. So I had to grow in this role step by step. And again, if I would have known more about it, maybe I would have said, I'm not sure if I want to do it like this. I want to be just a coach or whatever. I don't know yet anymore, but it's not important, obviously. The reason I came here was really the size of the club and the quality of the football team. So,
I mean, Jose Mourinho, of all people, once said to me, he could win with basically any group of players. He said, what it is about creating a band of brothers' spirit. And I was like, I'm not sure about that. But like, it stuck with me, that idea, that you creating this sense of common purpose where everyone works for each other. And I have to say, and I've seen a lot of Liverpool teams, I've never seen a Liverpool team that works as hard for each other as your team.
Yeah. So Jose is right and wrong in the same moment, I would say. My understanding is this: we only face super teams. They all are brilliant. They all are absolutely brilliant. They're good in this, good in that, good in this. And we are meanwhile better than some of them, but for sure not than all of them. But how can you make now a difference? If each team is perfectly prepared, so they all have good coaches, they have good sessions, football is not rocket science, so it's not that we invent the game every day new. So they're good prepared, physically fit, all these kind of things. And now there must be a reason why you win. There must be a reason why you win. And the closer you are together, the more you do it for each other, the more you love to suffer for each other, the more you love to sacrifice for each other, the better you will be. That's common sense. It's just common sense. The more it means to you, the better you will be. The better you can cope with the pressure around you, the better you will be. How can you cope with pressure if you just divide it on different shoulders? So if you have only one player with pressure and 10 or 25 without, will never work. So you have everybody needs to feel responsible and.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, it's Tomini from Tortoise. This podcast is sponsored by EY. Safe, efficient, and reliable railways help to keep us all connected, thanks to Network Rail. Yet, maintenance on the railways is a risky and sometimes fatal business. At Network Rail, two previous attempts to invigorate its track worker safety programs had failed, leaving employees feeling sceptical that the organisation could ever get railway safety right. Since 2019, EY teams have worked with Network Rail to deliver a transformation that improved safety protocols and changed employee behaviour around safety. Network Rail RailHub, a new digital safety platform and app, eliminated inaccurate paper trails and worked offline, so it could be used by workers in remote locations. Since the platform was introduced, near misses affecting maintenance workers on the railways have fallen by 40%. Read the full story at ey.com.
And importantly,
Tony, you've spoken about how Klopp has become an emblem of the city. So let's talk about the city itself. We know it's been hard hit by the pandemic in terms of infections, and that a link has been drawn between that Atletico Madrid game in March and a spike in cases of coronavirus 3 weeks later. But the city also looks like it's going to be hit pretty hard economically. And thinking back to Liverpool's last title win 30 years ago, it feels like there are some pretty striking parallels. Do you remember that time?
We want to fight back against the Tories who are attacking this city. people on the job have got about 80% youth unemployment in this city. And I know what it feels like to be on the dole now. So I'm fighting the Tories so they can't put any more people on the dole in this city. Because the Liverpool City Council are defending jobs and services.
Well, the last time they won the title, things had got slightly better. In many ways, the parallels are very light today, because the city felt that was it had moved out of the worst depression. The worst depression was in the early 80s, the early to mid 80s, which was dreadful. And by the early 90s, they were still lagging behind the rest of the country, because Liverpool as a city has always been on the margins, politically, socially, and economically, in certainly in England, throughout its modern history. And so there was a little bit of a feel-good factor. You know, people in the last few years haven't had to leave the city to get work like they did sort of when I was their age, you know, in the early 80s. You knew you had to go. By the 90s, things would begin to change, and it was still a city, obviously, behind a lot of other places, but things would begin to change, if not quite in a positive manner, but certainly the upwards curve had started. This virus has the potential to set things back significantly, and always when London catches a cold, Liverpool gets coronavirus.
There was a story once written called A Tale of Two Cities. Liverpool and London is a tale of two cities. Mrs. Thatcher, read that story. In the original Tale of Two Cities, someone lost their head. In this tale, I'm sure this government is going to lose its head and Labour's going to return.
I mean, the mayor, Joe Anderson, has said that the council could go bankrupt even. And, you know, obviously so much of the city's economy was based around tourism and around an influx of people coming. And if you look at numbers of universal credit claims, those have gone up by almost 60% since March. So you can see the beginnings of a slow-moving disaster, can't you? And I wonder, you know, maybe that makes this moment, the return of football, even more important.
Well, yeah, I'm one of the great attractions in the city is Liverpool Football Club. Tourists come in massive numbers to see the club, and games are played behind closed doors, so they won't be able to come. I think even in the good years, even when Liverpool appears to be doing positively, if you look at the Office of National Statistics, still a couple of the poorest areas of the country are in central Liverpool, you know, and you don't have to go far outside the city centre. I'm from about 3/4 of a mile from the city centre. And when I go home, I walk out and you go through all these shiny new buildings, and then you sort of get to where I'm from, and suddenly you're back in a desolate sort of area where underinvestment is so obvious. It's true. So you don't have to go far outside the superficial boom that the city centre experienced to experience the poverty. And the fear is that poverty will increase. What will happen post-virus has the potential to make things significantly worse. And always, when Liverpool is under the gun, you know, sort of in the worst possible way, the football teams, both teams, Everton as well, but Liverpool in particular, become more important to the sense of identity and the sense of positivity from people from the city. They're a symbol of identity, of resistance even, because even when things were at the bleakest over the years, Liverpool had the best football teams. And if we had nothing else to boast about, that's what we could boast about.
Liverpool are European champions!
Liverpool are the champions.
Because Liverpool have won the World Cup competition for the third year running. Liverpool have won the FA Cup for the seventh time. Liverpool are champions of Europe again!
So take me to that moment. 30 years of waiting, days away from their first Premier League title, and then suddenly football suspended, the city is denied. How did that feel?
Being from Liverpool and being as someone who survived the Hillsborough disaster as a fan and knowing so many people within the city, almost everyone in the city, even Everton fans, were touched by the Hillsborough disaster. They knew someone who died there. So we know the impact of football and how it can be a terrible force in some ways. And so everyone was like, the most important thing is people's lives, not the game. But there was a little bit within the city, people thinking, I hope the virus doesn't get me before we win the title, because that's, you know, something they've been looking forward to for 30 years.
And of course, there will have been fans, surely, who have died in this interim period who won't be able to see their team lift that trophy.
Yeah, I know a number of them who were diehard Liverpool fans who've been looking forward to this for so long, and they succumbed to coronavirus, which is, you know, which is really sad. In the great scheme of things, football matters very little. But, you know, these were people who were desperate to see this happen, and because of the pandemic, they haven't been able to. And it's poignant for Liverpool fans because there were so many who'd waited 30 years. The last title was in the aftermath of the Hillsborough disaster, when it was still raw and like an open wound. And now, here we are 30 years on, and there was a chance to celebrate without that shadow over them, and it'll never happen.
So let's talk about that return of football, because Klopp said recently that the team is mentally and physically prepared for the resumption of the Premier League. But obviously, they're going to be playing in empty stadiums. And I wonder, what is a Premier League win, for example, without an open-top bus parade? Or what is a Liverpool win without, you know, stadium full of people singing "You'll Never Walk Alone"? It's like this return of joy in our lives is behind glass or behind a screen, and, you know, we'll take joy from it, but I wonder whether something essential will be missing.
Well, yeah, it will be, because, you know, the great joy of football is the sense of participation, the sense of being part of the game. You know, I think we've seen from the results in Germany, what's happened behind closed doors, crowds do have a massive effect on games. So that'll be missing. But I think it's joy deferred rather than joy denied. No matter what happens, there will be an open-top bus parade. There will be a massive celebration when it's safe to do so. Liverpool will explode in a party that is, will, you know, the likes of which won't have been seen for a long time. And the rest of the country will look and say, there go them Scousers again. It happened ages ago. Why would they be doing this? Why would we be doing this? Well, we'll be doing this because we can and because we should be doing it now, but it's not safe to do it. And there will be wild celebrations, and Klopp's well up for it. You know, he says, we'll celebrate when we want to. No one tells us when to celebrate. When we're ready, we'll do it. Make no mistake, this title is fully deserved and will be fully celebrated.
Look, in all other countries, so Spain starts now, it will be the most difficult championship ever in Spain, because they are 2 points apart from each other. I think there's nothing really decided, not who will be champion. There's not decided who goes in the Champions League, European League. Nothing is decided there, only as an example. So this is the most difficult year to become champion. If it's tainted or get an asterisk, then it must be fine, but because it's so special and not because it's anything else. Usually, the only difference is that we, in the moment, we have 22, 25, whatever points. That's only because we played so far an incredible season. That's incredible season. That's a pure coincidence in history. So that's incredible. Usually, we have 7 points now. People would not say you should get an asterisk or whatever, because it says you have seven points. You have to bring it over the line. If you don't bring it, you are silly enough. You lost 7 points in 9 games and stuff like this. That's how people would be. Now they say, because we are 22 points ahead or 25, they say there could be. I can't help these people. When I heard Nilan Boyd, for me it was the main headline was now more than ever. now more than ever, 100%. And we have really to show now this is really special. We can make, we made it special and we want to keep it special. In the end, we decide how special it is when we look back. And from my point of view, it will be the most special because it's the most extraordinary year I ever had in my life. So from a success point of view, of course, but from a crisis point of view as well, we never had a situation like this. So deal with the situation and still become champion, that's massive. That's 100% massive.
So let's just close by talking about what you think comes next. What do you think Liverpool as a city, but also as a football club, has learned about itself in this long, long wait for the win? 30 years and then 3-4 extra months. What do you think has been learned?
But I think there's a little bit of, in football terms, humility. Because in 1990, no one could imagine that we'd go 30 years without them winning a title. In fact, 3 years would have been an appalling thought to us all. In fact, it was an appalling thought. So there's been a bit of humility football-wise. I think they've learned that. We've also learned that there are bigger battles to fight because during that period that took up the whole Hillsborough Justice campaign, which still has not finished. There is still some way to go with that. But vindication has come, and that was much more satisfying than any title, and it was a bigger release. So I think that they've learned that. I think economically, the last few weeks will prove the value of the football club to the city, and that it's something to be cherished and encouraged because it brings so many people to the city. And as you said, this is a city that, you know, needs tourism. It's a city without industry. The docks no longer, you know, have the power that they once had. Tourism is crucial to the future of the city, and Liverpool Football Club is crucial to the tourism. But at their essence, it's about community, and they're tied to the places where they grew up, where they're located. And this has proved more than ever for Liverpool. So although it's brilliant that Liverpool have fans in Indonesia, in America, all over Scandinavia, and there is you know, as valid a fan as someone from Liverpool 4 over the road from Anfield, the importance of the club as an institution and entity is to the city, and it must maintain the links to the city, and it allows people all over the world to share a sense of where it is to be Scouts, to be from Liverpool. And you know what? It's the greatest place in the world to come from. People will remember this year for numerous reasons, but one of them will be the pleasure they took in a simple daft thing like a game of football.
What a perfect note to end on. Tony, thanks so much for coming on the podcast and talking to us.
Always a pleasure.
Thanks for listening today. And if you've enjoyed this podcast, I think there's a really good chance that you'll enjoy all the other stuff that we do at Tortoise. We publish articles and investigations in our app and online. And because we're an open newsroom, you can join our editorial meetings from wherever you are in the world, and you can shape our journalism and the stories that we tell. All you need to do is get our app, and you can get access to everything that we do. Just go to tortoisemedia.com/podtrial and you can get a 30-day free trial. And of course, if you like this podcast, do share it with your friends, recommend it, review it, share it on social media. Thank you, and we'll see you next week.
how do you treat other people? If you treat them like you want to be treated by them or by all other people, then you should be fine if you are not a complete idiot, to be honest. And then it's difficult. If you don't know anything about life, then it's difficult. But if you're a normal person, you should be fine.
Hello, it's Tomini from Tortoise. This podcast is sponsored by EY. Safe, efficient and reliable railways help to keep us all connected, thanks to Network Rail. Yet, maintenance on the railways is a risky and sometimes fatal business. At Network Rail, two previous attempts to invigorate its track worker safety programs had failed, leaving employees feeling sceptical that the organisation could ever get railway safety right. Since 2019, EY teams have worked with Network Rail to deliver a transformation that improved safety protocols and changed employee behaviour around safety. Network Rail RailHub, a new digital safety platform and app, eliminated inaccurate paper trails and worked offline, so it could be used by workers in remote locations. Since the platform was introduced, near misses affecting maintenance workers on the railways have fallen by 40%. Read the full story at ey.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.